The Second City and WGN Radio's Getting to Yes and podcast is in our studio to talk about a series of podcasts that he recently dropped, which, if they had a theme, would be the power of getting uncomfortable. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
You look good. You're well?
I am.
You and I talk in the hall, and we hear you with Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch now and again. I like to steal you when I can, especially if we can kind of maybe put a bunch of your ideas or podcasts into one neat little package and talk about that.
Right.
So as not to invade Steve's space.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I feel fine about this. Go ahead.
I mean, like, how is it that you're even on Steve's show? Because Steve's is a business show. What are you doing over there?
I work for a company that has a business division, and that's what many of my interviews are about.
Second City has a business division.
Yeah, Second City Works.
And that's a comedy company.
Well, a comedy and improv company. But, I mean, you know, comedy for messaging, right? Comedy is a sticky way. This is why the Super Bowl, you watch Super Bowl, it's a lot of comedy ads, because that really sticks. And then improvisation is the ability for human beings to be more agile, be more change ready, more resilient.
When I go to Second City, though, I'm not thinking about business or change. I'm thinking about, hey, let's go have a fun time.
Well, there's that, too.
So that's I presume that was the genesis of Second City. It was.
Well, yeah, Second City is not going to advertise itself as like going to the dentist or anything. So same thing with like, you know, we're
you
a business company.
Me, man. you could probably help me. But I mean, the genesis of Second City was improv, right?
Yeah, but what many people don't realize is the genesis of the improv exercises that everyone got trained in were done by a sociologist in the 20s and 30s at
really?
Jane Addams Hull House. Yeah, Viola Spolin.
No kidding. So yeah. The segue then to these business applications was natural.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so there you are doing something like that with Steve. What's this business then of a series of podcasts about the power of getting uncomfortable?
Well, yeah. So this is a conversation you and I have because LF, your producer, is my producer. So we'll end up talking about like what themes are you seeing? And one of the things that I saw over the course of like these three podcasts, one was with a Harvard Business School professor, one was with a Black Studies sociologist, and one was with like a branding guy. All of them talked about the power of getting uncomfortable as a way to innovate, make new, and get ahead. And we know a little about this at Second City because in improv, a lot of it is getting you used to ambiguity. You know, when you're creating something without a script, you really have to be comfortable that this thing can go anywhere, which means you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
The title of your podcast is
Getting to Yes And.
Getting to Yes And. And I bring that point up because it seems like you're touching on that here. What is the meaning of the title of your podcast?
Right. So in improvisation, if it's groups of people who are making something out of nothing without a script, which is kind of what we all do every day in our work and in our lives, no one's handing us scripts normally, we get nowhere when we say no. And actually, we can't get very far by just saying yes. We have to say yes and. We have to affirm and contribute in order to explore and heighten. So you really have to cede the need to be right, which is a big thing in improv, and allow by yes-anding with someone else for maybe this idea that is emerging to be co-created and not just the product of your single imagination.
But the discomfort comes where?
The discomfort comes in that we don't want to work without a script. We want to have our ideas. We want to have a roadmap, and that's the way our brains are wired.
So are these business people or these sociologists telling you that if you want to be successful in business, you're not going to find that fertile ground until
right.
you find yourself uncomfortable?
Yeah. And also, the other idea that was coming true is you have to let other voices and eyes come into your world to make discoveries because you just see too much. So the great example of this was in World War II. This is a great story, and Gary Pisano from Harvard talks about this, that they were looking at the planes that were coming back from battle and examining where the bullet holes were. And they were like, look, we got to reinforce the place where these bullet holes were. But that had no correlation to actually the planes that weren't coming back. So the statistician, Abraham Wald, came in. They brought him in to look at this, like, what are you seeing? And he's like, you know what I'm seeing? You don't need to worry about where the bullet holes are. You should worry about where they aren't, because where they aren't means the planes that got shot down are the bullets were hitting the place where it was okay.
These are the planes that landed safely.
Yeah, they landed safely.
They can withstand that.
Yes.
Where the bullet holes aren't in this plane is the place that we do have.
That is mind-blowing.
And yet it's suddenly obvious.
Simple. But it's not simple if, you know, I always talk about this, which is I've lived essentially in the same area in Chicago for my entire time working at Second City, which is 31 years. I drive the same way. I have stopped looking or seeing anything new or different because I've just, this is always the way I drive. And so it's very hard to get yourself out of your own patterns and the own things you see. So, you know, all of these great thinkers talk about the need to, Alan Adamson, who's a marketing guy, talks about leadership. He goes, find the desk farthest away from the customer, and that's where the person in charge often sits, which is a terrible place to be. You don't want to be farthest away. You want to be in with your customers to actually see what's going on. And that requires, you know, this is the thing we do. Success can sometimes be a trap because you start to just sort of believe everything you touch is gold and you keep doing things the same way. And maybe you have a little bit more success, but down the line, things change and you might not be able to be keeping up at that point.
We were at an event here for this radio station not that long ago, and the guy said that Netflix is an example of that at a time when 99% of their business was rentals. They decided to get out of the rental business,
right?
Because they knew that this was not where that industry was going.
Sure.
But can you imagine somebody running the register, 99 cents on every dollar coming in as rental, and he's going, we got to get out of this. This is a bad idea. And they go, what are you going to do? We're going to do sales or we're going to do streaming? Wait, that's not even been invented, or it's 1% of the business.
You want right.
But that's what they did.
Yeah, and Blockbuster didn't buy Netflix.
Think about that.
And think about the fact that, you know, Kodak and film and not going digital. And by the way, the people who invented the iPod, they all worked at Kodak.
Really?
Yep.
Well, can you give me another example, though? What's a practical application of this? I mean, all right, so I understand those anecdotes,
yeah.
But I don't know, I'm managing a machine shop or a school or a business. How do I use this getting uncomfortable idea?
Yeah, so a couple different things that we've done, which is having people from different departments switch for a day or 2 days or a week and see what they discover inside, what new ideas can they bring in. It's for leaders who recognize that when they have a meeting, maybe someone doesn't talk up, they're very introverted. So you have to create space for that person's idea to emerge. So sometimes shutting up is a really great thing to do because it allows you to hear better. And I know my friend Neil Stevenson, who ran IDEO here, the design firm for a while, he's designed all these interactions that he gives many of his clients, like when you get in an Uber, have an uncomfortable conversation with the guy who's driving. Or when you get to the airport, go into the magazine store and pick out a magazine you would never read.
Yeah.
You know, all these different prompts that just allow you to get a little outside of your comfort zone.
But that doesn't help me with my employees. That just trains my brain to be more open to new ideas. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's what you want to do because you want everyone wants their employees to bring them great ideas. But it's not enough to sort of say, I have an open office door to your great idea. A good leader finds prompts and training and coaching for their people so that they can tease out their best ideas. I can give you a quick example from Second City. Mick Napier, famous director here in town, has a thing called Taboo Day. He knows that even the great talent at Second City sometimes censors themselves. So he says, all right, you need to bring an idea that Second City would never allow to be on the stage. It is too offensive. It's too expensive. It's too crazy. And lo and behold, everyone, you know, they're suddenly the shackles are off. 4 out of 6 of those ideas are going to end up on stage.
Really?
Yes, because they are interesting and they're different. And there is a way to get this really creative thinking and make it work so it can be turned into content.
Seems to me like when I hear stuff like this, a lot of the employees are going, oh, good idea, but I don't care. If I tell the boss what I really think or what I think is going wrong or my new idea, which is counter to the current thinking, they'll be defensive about it.
Sure.
And I'll have hell to pay.
Yeah. I mean, you got to also know where you sit and know where your company sits. Amy Edmondson is someone we had on the podcast a long while ago. She's the person who defined this term psychological safety, which is necessary for groups to do great work. Google did this big study. It was called Project Aristotle. What was the number one thing that innovative teams needed? Psychological safety. So it's legendary and it's out there. Look, I'm finding in my experience, because we work with, you know, we do something like 700 dates a year with Fortune 1000 companies, you're not calling Second City because you want to play it safe. So there's at least 700 companies out there, and many of them are you know who they are, the Nikes, the Netflix, the Googles of the world, who do understand the power of unleashing an individual's mind and the power of teams. And then the companies who don't, you know, you have to make a decision for yourself. Do you want to work in that space?
From Second City and WGN Radio's Getting to Yes And, podcaster Kelly Leonard is in our studio. And we're talking about a series of podcasts he's recently done. If there was a theme to them, you could say the power of getting uncomfortable. So then is it really that? Like, I'll get my employees in the room and I'm going to find a prompt to make us uncomfortable? Is that?
Well, that's what we do, right? So you, companies will hire Second City to come in and lead their employees through a variety of exercises, many which seem like totally benign, but they are designed to do just that, to get you sort of thinking a bit differently. And then we progress the workshop over, you know, they're often like 3 hours long, where then they can start, you know, sharing their ideas and their scenarios and things that happen in their business. Yeah, it's not enough just to say, be uncomfortable. With many things, and I think we've talked about this before, it's a practice. You know, you'd never go to Second City and think that we didn't rehearse. You'd never go to, you know, White Sox Park or Wrigley Field and think that they didn't, like, stretch. Yet we all walk into our businesses and, you know, lots of money is at stake. And how many people are actually practicing the thing that they do?
How lucky for the employees, the employers engage in this,
yeah.
Because I guess this is a top-down idea.
Yeah, well, it's top-down and it's bottom-up, right? That's what it needs to be. I think people have discovered that the hierarchy system, the management books have been saying this for years, even though that's still the way a lot of businesses are organized. But you really do, I mean, you know, where you want your employees improvising and improvising well is when they've got a problem, like at the front desk. You know, or a problem at the bar, because that's the difference between gaining a customer for life or losing a customer for life, or in the age of social media, having someone put you on blast.
Give me an example of what you're talking about.
Oh, it's just at Second City, this happens all the time. You have an upset customer who, you know, bought a ticket to the wrong show and is confused about it. You know, my son worked in the box office. What I want him to do, get that person in the other show. You know, like make the move to please them in the moment, because it'll cost the company more to do the other way.
This is what amazes me sometimes. And I don't run a business. I'm sure there's obvious reasons why you don't do this, but empower the frontline people to be that flexible.
Yeah.
Hopefully you've hired credible, intelligent, fair, you know, you got the right people there, but there have been times where you go, you know that there's a fix to this, and I know there's a fix to this, and we're all going to be happy, but you don't seem to be able to do that.
So we interviewed Horst Schultz, who is the founder of the modern incarnation of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. Every employee at Ritz-Carlton has a budget of $10,000 to please a customer.
Really?
Yep.
Really?
Lost a suit, you know, made a bad reservation. And he tells the story of, like, getting taken advantage. There's a guy who took advantage of that a bunch, and he called him out. But that, you know, that's rare. The take advantage is rare. I mean, the idea there was, and this is, that's what the Ritz brand is. That's why people go there. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Mm, yeah, so even if there's some abuse, if you absorb that into the cost of running the business, the upside is that you're going to get those loyal customers back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's still a reasonable expense, in other words.
It is a reasonable expense.
Yeah. Another anecdote from Kelly from Second City. In the WGN Radio podcast, Getting to Yes And, I hope you are enjoying this as much as I am. And if you are, then you need to make this podcast part of your regular download, Getting to Yes And. Kelly Leonard's podcast on WGNRadio.com and wherever you get your podcasts is called Getting to Yes And. Recently, he talked to a number of people, and those pods have already been posted. And if there was a theme to it all, it was the power of being uncomfortable. I asked him to come into our studio and talk a little bit more about it. And Kelly, you were saying that this is a kind of a good thing to contemplate if you're in business.
Right.
You need to upset the norm and then, in that new space, see what creative ideas come up. That changes the business structure.
Mm-hmm.
Does it work in sort of social issues as well? I mean, I want to make my company more profitable, but what if I want to get people to recycle more?
Yeah, care about the environment, that sort of thing. Sure.
Pick the social cause.
It does, and that was the interesting connection that I found. So I interviewed, and Steve Bertrand and I talked about this on his show. George Lipsis, who's a professor of Black Studies and Sociology at UC Santa Barbara, has a book called Insubordinate Spaces. And an insubordinate space is a place where a social movement can draw from. He's got this great quote. He says, you can cultivate a collective capacity to discern the what can be inside the what is, where you can hone and refine tools for turning the toxic present into a tonic future. And it was a beautiful sort of, you know, phraseology, but it really is about, and he says, these are not safe spaces. You know, it can be, you know, we all know this in social movements, they are not safe. But, you know, we haven't had great social change without exactly that stuff taking place, which is, you know, a great hope, a great dream, but the ability of people to come together and recognize they're going to have to struggle to get there together.
Do you make the people then who don't share your values or views on the issue uncomfortable? Or is it that I have to be uncomfortable?
No, both, right? So your discomfort inside that movement is a physical threat, you know, a verbal threat. For the people on the outside, I mean, we all, you know, we know that, especially with the example of the Vietnam War, the first time we saw those bodies coming home, that turned a lot of people against the war. And increasingly, you know, the environment we live in is when the images are matching up with the ideas, that's what really changes things. We do not want to see, you know, people get hurt.
Okay, but if then the issue, if whatever my cause is, if I want to be a change agent, I'm going to have to make people uncomfortable maybe with their precepts in order to get them to see it my way, which can be seen as aggressive.
It can
be seen as toxic or I don't know, there's a lot of adjectives I can use to describe that methodology, but and that's not a nice little package.
It's not a nice little package. And this is the broader point, right? So it can get really murky and difficult and tragic, like you're talking about in a social change movement. But we're really working with the same dynamic, which is how does the human brain work? How do human beings respond to different stimuli? And the fact is, when we want to create something completely new, when we want to invent new ways of doing things, we don't get there by everything being easily lined up.
Are some people always going to be intractable, though?
Yes.
I'm just thinking about if there's a political application. If the Democrats really wanted to have the Republicans see it their way, I wonder how they do that, because they sure seem to be using aggression and it's not working.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I'll go speak I do a lot of public speaking, and in the Q&A, it always ends like, hey, can you go to Washington to teach these people how to improvise together and how to yes and? But yeah, if you're entering the room not wanting to make your partner look good, that's an improv thing, then you are not going to succeed in collaborating.
Say that again.
In improvisation, when you you need to make your partner look good. You have to go in with the orientation that you are going to be others focused, that you are seeding the need to be right. All these elements that allow people to work well together is exactly what doesn't happen in Washington.
But where I was just suggesting that the way to make change is to make that other person uncomfortable. See, look what you're doing to the environment.
Yeah,
you're suggesting that we also need to find a way to make them look good.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, you know, it gets tricky. Again, this is the point of you brought it up. Are there certain people who are intractable? You know, this is about behaviors and environments. You know, so it's an individual behavior coming in, but it's also what environment am I working in? Am I in a place where it is safe for me to collaborate? And I would suggest Washington right now doesn't feel like a safe space to collaborate.
I guess that's where you really need the Republican and Democratic leaders to, if we were ever going to reach across the aisle. I was laughing about the hearings today in Washington. I said, never once during any of these hearings have I ever seen one person from the one party turn to the person from the other party and go, you know, you got a point there.
Right.
I mean, because that's not a safe environment for that kind of exchange. So the Republican leadership and the Democratic leadership and whoever the leadership is, maybe it's behind closed doors, maybe it's not on national television, but they need to find a place where these people can come to some kinds of consensus.
100%. But there's so many other factors involved in that. And I think what the important thing to recognize is that if you can't, you know, none of us are going to change Washington, but can we change our little corner of the earth? Can we change our work team? Can we change our household?
Getting to yes and, literally type that in. Those are the search words for the podcast done by Kelly Leonard. Thanks for coming in, Kelly.
Thanks for having me here.
When are you on with Steve Bertrand again?
We're on not next Tuesday, but the Tuesday following.
Does that sound about right, Steve Bertrand?
I might have just put him on probation.
Now you know why I stole him. Thank you, Kelly.
Thanks.